Morning News is brought to you by Sprague Sports on 32nd Street, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters and responsible gun ownership since 1956.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Good morning, Yuma. This is Sean Garner. I'm an attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson, and I'm in studio with Russ Clark. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And our guest here is Howard Blitz. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Sean. Hey, Russ. How are you?
Doing well.
Good.
So, as usual, we're going to be talking about life, death, and the law. We're going to be focusing our discussion around the Constitution, the great Constitution of the United States, and talking about some things that are written in the Constitution, but when you read them directly, you feel like we've strayed so far away from it that they even sound bizarre, that's what our founding fathers originally wrote, and now this is what we're doing in contrast. And so what I want to talk about is Article 1. And,
I'm ready for bizarre.
Okay, good.
No, I'm good.
Well,
it's a bizarre document.
Yes, it is. It was revolutionary at the time. Yeah. It really
seems to be revolutionary today, too.
I wish we would have another revolution and get back to the original meaning of it. So Article 1 of the Constitution, Mr. Blitz, what does that talk about? What kind of powers does it talk about in Article 1?
Article 1 talks about the legislative branch. It's all about the legislative branch.
All about the legislative
branch.
And
what powers are delegated to the legislative branch.
Yes, and they're enumerated powers. They're not...
Yeah, they're listed out.
Yeah.
That's what enumeration means.
They're not indefinite. They're not, so large and so many that we can't count as, now we have books and books and books of laws. They're very clearly defined enumerated powers.
Yeah.
And...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Specifically, it talks about how they're elected and how how our individuals are placed in office. There's the House, there's the Senate. The House has representatives over a period of 2 years of a term, and the Senate has a term period of 6 years. But the terms and the period of time that they serve now is a bit different, and they're elected a bit differently than originally spelled out in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So, originally, the House of Representatives was to be elected by the people and for a term of 2 years. Why would they limit it to such a short period of time?
Well, they gave those representatives term limits. They wanted to make sure that the citizenry had a hold on these people. If they got out of line, then they wouldn't have to suffer through their mistakes for longer than 2 years. And so they kind of assumed, I believe, the people who wrote this document, that the people would keep an eye on all these people that they elect and be aware of what they're doing. And so they gave them a period of 2 years and they could get reelected or they could not get reelected. But it's really interesting. In Article 1, Section 1, it specifically states, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. So that means, that's very specific. All lawmaking powers. In other words, the Congress is the only part of government that can make law. No other part of government can make law. And so that, the president can't make a law.
That in that itself sounds bizarre.
And the judiciary, the Supreme Court, can't make any law either.
Right.
Only the Congress. And this article is the longest article because it represents the people in general directly. And they were very specific about this. The people who wrote this document were very specific that only the Congress can make laws. So when we're hearing about laws and regulations and rules, because these are all laws put out by the FDA and the IRS and you name it, that's illegal. That's unconstitutional. That's outside the Constitution. The President of the United States has no power to make any kind of law. He absolutely does. And neither does the Supreme Court. So I don't understand, I guess, why all of a sudden when the Supreme Court makes a decision, because that's what they're doing, they're making a decision on something, automatically we assume that that's the law. That isn't the law. It's just it's an opinion by the court. That's all it is. And maybe you can enlighten us a little bit more since you're an attorney.
That's exactly it. And we hear about legislating from the bench. And what that means is when courts get a case in front of them that the case has to deal with some controversy or interpretation of the law, there's parties on either side of that controversy. And the court says, okay, this is what the law means, and this is how it's going to be interpreted. Therefore, Party A, you win because that was your interpretation going in, and therefore we're going to grant you relief. And that's it. They don't write new law. Now, since they interpret the law, then they can expand out on what our understanding of it is, because certainly you have a finite amount of space that you can write when your legislature writing down the laws, and then the courts interpret that law, and they make sure, and I think this is their primary responsibility, and they should always start at this, to make sure that the law is constitutional, first and foremost.
Well, yeah, but their opinions, their decisions on particular cases only apply to that particular case. It doesn't mean that, okay, all the other cases are going to be applied the same way. That's not necessarily true, is it?
Well, so what that's called is common law. So there's statutory law, and then there's common law.
Correct.
So statutory law is the black and white language in the statutes that the legislatures create.
Correct.
And sometimes that can be hard to read and understand, and sometimes that can leave some areas that are unspecified as to certain circumstances. And so what the judges do is they apply a very specific set of circumstances. So, you know, let's say that there's a law that I can't allow my dog to walk without a leash, right? And so I have my dog on a piece of yarn, okay? And I'm walking my dog down the street, and it breaks the piece of yarn, and it bites your dog to pieces, okay? So you sue me, and you say, hey, listen, there was a specific law that was in place. Your dog had to be on a leash, and it wasn't, so you owe me damages for what occurred to my poodle, the vet charges, you know, my emotional distress and everything else, because you broke that law. And I said, well, no, I didn't. My dog was on a leash. And you said, no, that was a piece of yarn. Court interprets, did I abide by the law or not, right? Yeah. There's some gray area there. Okay. And what the court has done is they've strayed far from that. Now, not every court, and many judges, there are numerous judges. Our closest encounter with judges as local citizens is usually with the Superior Court. And they're excellent at looking directly at the black and white letter of the law and saying, well, this is what the law says, and this is the common sense interpretation of it, especially if we look back through other precedent, other court rulings, or other legal history, especially legislative history. That's the history that the legislators went through in writing the law. And so this is how we're going to interpret it. But the higher courts, they've gone beyond that. For example, when in determining that same-sex marriage and discrimination against same-sex marriage is unconstitutional, I don't see any basis in that decision whatsoever. Now, I think that individual states can legislate that they want to recognize same-sex marriage, and that's fine. But I think that the Supreme Court way overstepped its bounds when it said, listen, for the nation, all states must recognize, all local municipalities must recognize, nationally must be recognized, that same-sex marriage is like a constitutional right. That is not a right that was written into the Constitution. And as we continue to get more rights that are written in by judicial legislation or legislation from the bench, then that is taking power away from the states. It's taking power away from the people to decide for themselves what laws ought to be.
I'm not sure if this relates to what you're talking about, but it sounded like it did. In Article 4, Section 1, it talks about the full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. So if a state makes a law banning same-sex marriage, say we did that in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does the state of Washington have to recognize, or maybe, I'm sorry, yeah, say we did that mm-hmm. in Arizona.
Okay.
And the state of Washington okays, you know, they don't have a, people can get married of the same sex.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does Arizona, and then this couple moves to Arizona. Doesn't this mean that Arizona has to recognize that marriage?
Well, and I think that was a question that went before the court, that that full faith and credit clause says, hey, if there's a law made, it's got to be recognized across state boundaries. And there was a big controversy as to whether or not that was the case up until the Supreme Court decided that it was unconstitutional to discriminate against same-sex marriage or homosexual marriages. Then the states honored each other's laws, but when you were in that state's boundaries in Arizona, you weren't determined to be married. You weren't given that that title of a married couple, and so for tax purposes, you weren't recognized as being married. And on a federal level, it wasn't recognized that you were married, so you couldn't claim the same type of tax benefits that a married couple would receive. So that explains that a little bit. I want to get back to that because it's a really good question. Yeah, it really hits the point.
Because it involves common law, too.
Yeah, I've got to take a break now.
Okay.
But we're going to get back to that. And this is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law.
More thought-provoking conversation coming up next on Life, Death, and the Law, right here after this.
Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Weather is brought to you by Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros, serving Arizona for over 20 years.
It may be spring, but it's starting to feel like summer with these triple-digit temperatures. 100 today. We do cool down some tomorrow, 92. 95 the high Wednesday. By speeding up the hiring process, Indeed puts the dash in dashboard. Use Instant Match to connect immediately with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. Then use your dashboard to conduct interviews. Find out more at Indeed.com/credit. I'm meteorologist Terry Smith from the Weather Channel.
Contest rules for all giveaways and contests on 560 KBLU can be viewed and downloaded at our website, KBLUAM.com.
Derek Eggeberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage here, NMLS number 180899, with Academy Mortgage, inspiring hope, delivering dreams, and building prosperity, where we help individuals and families build a foundation for their future by providing opportunities to obtain home ownership through unique products and services. Academy Mortgage is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 3113, Arizona license number 0904081.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back. This is Life, Death, and the Law. My name is Sean Garner, and I'm an attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson. I'm not a constitutional expert. I'm just a humble lawyer that does estate planning. But I love the Constitution, and I think that it laid the foundation that revolutionized not only this country but the world in thinking that we have three inalienable rights, and that is the right to life, liberty, and property, and they're all inseparable. And if we remove any one of them from the other, then we destroy the other two. And we were talking about the Full Faith and Credit Act. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about that, the act is to establish all states recognizing the rights of the citizens of the sister state. And that's a good thing. We want to be able to travel throughout this country freely and recognize that if I've got a driver's license in Idaho, that driver's license isn't going to be taken away in Montana. However, in Idaho, when I grew up in Idaho, okay, I could get a driver's license when I was 14 years old.
Man.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Pretty frightful for the other people on the road, but pretty awesome for me. And so I could get that license. Now, when I went to Washington, they could not revoke my Idaho license. However, if I got pulled over in Washington, that license wasn't valid. They said you got to be 16 to have a driver's license.
Oh.
And so, yeah, you go ahead and drive over here on your own accord, and we're not going to invalidate the license that you have in Idaho, but we are not going to allow you to drive in Washington with a license that we don't recognize in Idaho.
Okay, I didn't know they could do that.
Yeah. So going back to your marriage question, would a marriage that was recognized in Massachusetts be have to be recognized in Arizona? No. Arizona did not have to recognize that marriage prior to that Supreme Court case that said that marriage between any two people was an enforceable contract by the states or an enforceable legal agreement, and if you discriminated against it, then that was unconstitutional. So all states had to recognize the union of two individuals as opposed to the union of just a man and a woman. Does that answer your question?
Okay, so what you're saying is that every state, based upon Article 4, Section 1 here, has to recognize the laws of every other state.
Is yes, right? They have to recognize those laws.
Because that's what this is saying.
They have to enforce them within their boundaries. That they just recognize those laws from those states.
Okay. So that couple that came from Massachusetts, moved to Arizona, they're married in Arizona.
And that's a bit different, right? That's where it gets a little gray. That's different than me getting a driver's license at 14 and going to Washington and them not recognizing it, but it's kind of similar. And so the Supreme Court heard that. And what they decided was that it is a constitutional right, or you cannot discriminate. It's unconstitutional to discriminate against same-sex marriages. And okay, that was their ruling, and now that is the law. They essentially made law with that ruling. I don't think that they had the constitutional authority to expand it that broadly, especially because it was already given to the legislatures to make the law with regard to individual states, and it was given to Congress to make the law with regard to national policy, specifically the IRS, how they would tax same-sex couples. And that's where the big issue came from. It was tax credits. Would a spouse that was a same-sex married spouse get the same benefits, the same credits and discounts as a heterosexual spouse? And the answer to this that the Supreme Court gave was they should, and they had the right to it, and therefore they changed the law of all the country.
See, in all of this that you're talking about, that you're discussing right now, emanates from the income tax.
Right.
If we...
That was the question. It was the income tax and also the estate tax.
That's why these guys, when they wrote this document, said there wasn't going to be an income tax. There wasn't going to be a direct tax. There wasn't going to be a capitation tax unless it was proportionally allotted among the states. In other words, the states had to come up with the money. The power was left to the states to decide how they were going to raise the money. Okay? In other words, if the federal government needed $100 billion and Arizona had 10% of the population, okay, we'd have to come up with $10 billion. Now, how Arizona does that, that's up to them. That's up to the state legislature. But basically, the state of Arizona would cough up the money. And then with this 16th Amendment, that changed the whole outlook on this thing. That changed it terribly to where now the federal government doesn't have to worry about proration. They just go directly into everybody's pocketbook. Right. And takes the money directly out of it.
Right.
So if we get rid of the income tax, that would solve a lot of issues, number one. But number two, why does anyone have to get permission to do anything from even the state, from the state government or the federal government? There's common law marriages, right?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you don't get a marriage license. You just live together for, I don't know what the minimum number of years is, but
usually,
whatever it is, you're considered to be married after that point.
Yeah, and it's not recognized in Arizona, which I think is a very good thing, because it is recognized in some areas of Canada. And I've seen where we've had issues with Canadian couples that come down where they've lived together for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in Canada, it's recognized as a common law marriage that spouse now, without any type of legal written agreement, is now considered to be a spouse. And so if somebody dies without a will or a trust, intestate, the term goes,
right,
then that common law spouse is entitled to inheritance, which really makes a mess of things, because trying to prove that they were legitimately together for 3 years and not on and off, or, you know, didn't quite make the 3-year mark, that's a tough thing to do. But a marriage license that's signed and certified, yeah, and here's the thing, whether it be by the state or whether it be by a religious clergy or whoever, some document that indicates a contract between the couple. That's okay. What we're getting at.
The contract is the key word
between
there.
The couple, yes. Yeah. And what you're saying is we don't need a license from the state to get that contract. And I agree with you. We should not need a license from the state to get that contract. I can enter into a contract with anybody I want. In fact, it's written specifically in the Constitution.
Right.
That I have the right to contract.
Right.
I don't need to get anybody's permission,
right,
but I should still contract in order to have those laws enforced.
So that you can prove that you might be entitled to something later on.
So we don't have chaos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
There was a question I was going to ask, and now I can't.
Well, I want to talk.
I lost my train of thought. Maybe it'll come back.
It'll come back. It's just taking a little bit for the hard drive to warm up here. But so while you're talking about that, I want to talk about the full faith and credit.
Yeah.
So estate planning, lest we get too far, you know, off of the fact that I am an estate planning attorney, we do wills that recognizes the fact that you can draw up a contract that says where your property will go when you pass away. Now, wills are one way to do that, but a will has to be probated in the state in where you die or where you hold property. Okay, a trust, it can flow freely across state boundaries, and so you can do a trust in Arizona. And I'm biased towards Arizona, but I think Arizona has some of the greatest laws to empower people to determine where their property goes with the least amount of government intervention. And it will be applicable in New York or Washington or Utah or wherever you go. In fact, this time of year, I do a lot of trusts for people in Oregon or who are residents of Oregon or Montana, because they live here part of the year. And they can contract here and they can use the laws and benefit from the laws in Arizona, put all of their property into a trust that they create in Arizona, and even property in Montana, and their family won't be subject to probate when they die. So that's full faith and credit there going as it was intended to be used.
So they can create their trust here in Arizona. If they died in Montana, that trust would still be operable.
Absolutely. And their trustee who lives in New York could administer it.
Okay. Now, doesn't Arizona honor common law marriages?
No. Absolutely not.
Never?
It's a black and white no. You can live with somebody for 25 years. I
see always under the understanding that common law marriages were...
Most people are.
Proper, okay, legal, whatever you want to call it.
You are among the majority that believes that. But wow. It's just not true. And that's the purpose of getting out there and trying to educate the community, because we want people to understand what the law actually is as opposed to what you believe it is.
Yeah.
Because that's going to allow you to take the greatest advantage of your opportunities to contract. And a trust is simply that, a contract. It determines who's going to manage your property when you're not around to do it or when you're incapacitated. And that's a great thing. It's a wonderful opportunity to do. In fact, that's what the Constitution is. It's a political trust.
True.
The founding fathers said, we have something. We've established something that is so important that we want all of our... all of our descendants to enjoy this. And so what we need to do is we need to put it into a trust that will live indefinitely. Really? And that trust will be held by the people. Yeah. And the people get to look over it and to make sure that those rights and those freedoms are honored in perpetuity.
Yeah.
And so now we here, as the inheritors of this great legacy that our founding fathers left us, are the trustees of this trust. And how good a job are we doing? I think if we were held up to determine whether or not we're following through with our duties as a trustee.
Not good.
Not good. We're coming up on a break here, but we'll come back and talk more about that. This is 560 AM KBLU Life, Death, and Law.
Have a question? Our phone lines are open. Call 344-5258. That's 344-KBLU.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Join the millions switching to Spectrum Mobile and you could save up to 40%. Nationwide 5G is included with every plan and there are no added taxes or fees, plus no contracts. And for a limited time, get up to $300 off a new Samsung 5G phone with trade-in when you switch to Spectrum Mobile. Visit a Spectrum store near you or go to SpectrumMobile.com today. Savings based on comparison of single line comparable unlimited plans amongst major national carriers as of 1/27/2021. Data usage limits vary by carrier. Spectrum internet required. Services not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Listen to Sean Hannity weekdays from noon to 3 right here on 560 AM KBLU. Sean Hannity's brought to you by Liberty Motorsports on Arizona Avenue for all the best motorsports products in the industry, plus your service needs since 1981.
Grown-ups devise a plan and follow it. Children do what feels good. Take responsibility for your family's future and get your estate in order. Call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen, attorneys at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a consultation today. Visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back, Yuma. This is Sean Garner. I'm an attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hansen. Can you hear me through your headphones? Okay, because I can't hear myself. Maybe I got to turn my volume up a little bit. Okay, there we go.
Got that control.
So now that I can hear myself, we're talking about the Constitution. We're talking about full faith and credit, meaning other states recognize laws that are made in the sister states or the states within the United States. And you
have a
question.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Because, okay, you had mentioned that, okay, Arizona does not recognize, the state of Arizona does not recognize common law marriage.
Right. And
okay.
So before we get too far,
yeah, go ahead.
I want to say, do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know.
I'll play the
personally,
opposite. Whatever you
I don't
say.
See what, I don't see what the problem is. Okay? Now, but you made mention that, you know, we should have a contract. The two people living together probably should have a contract. Just like, you know, if you want to get your pool redone,
yep,
you probably ought to have a contract with the pool guy.
Yeah, what if I have somebody move into a house that I have for rent?
Yeah.
Do you think it's a good idea that I write down the terms of that rent?
Yeah, mm. Have a rental agreement. That's a contract, right?
Well, don't you think marriage is a bit more important than just letting somebody stay in
and
your house?
And that would be, and I guess that's what is meant by, from a lot of people's standpoint, a common law marriage, where they have a contract. Some people don't, but where they actually do have a legal agreement. Yeah, contract. That's an illegal document. Right?
Absolutely. And the total polar opposite is when people get married and then sign a legal agreement that they're not going to blend their assets and other assets that they acquire or income that they make during their marriage is not going to be considered community property. Now, so because Arizona is a community property state,
okay,
a lot of people blend that over into the idea of
common law. Marriage.
Yes,
okay.
And that's not true. If you get married, then property that you acquire while you're married, regardless of how it's titled, is default hers and his, or his and his, or however the marriage might go.
Right.
And so if you want to keep it separate, then you enter into a prenup agreement. Now, I have a lot of people that come into my office, and they want to have a trust or will drafted, and they want it to continue to be separate because this is a second marriage, and they have a separate family from a prior marriage, and they say, okay, we have a prenup, and so I have my property and she has her property. I say, okay, great, let's go down and look at the list. So we go down the list, and the house is held jointly, and the car is held jointly, and the bank account is held jointly.
Right.
And I say, well, hold on a sec. How are we going to divide these assets? And they said, well, the prenup, you know, spells it out. And I said, what the prenup says is any property that was yours going into the marriage stays yours. What house did you have? Oh, well, that was two houses ago. Well, the house that you now have shows that you own it jointly. So it's as if the prenup says that he came into the marriage with the Kool-Aid mix, she came into the marriage with the water, and you agree that he gets to keep his Kool-Aid mix separate. But what you did with it is you blended it, right? You made some Kool-Aid drink.
Yeah.
And in this joint property status with the house and the car and the bank accounts, how do you expect me to separate now the powder from the water?
Right.
It's impossible. So if you want to do that, and many people are in this situation, if you're in a second marriage or you're in a relationship where you want to maintain your assets yours, you can actually contract to supersede what the default state law is, and that is that's community property that will all blend together, and say, no, I want my property to stay mine as we go through the marriage. And that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do, especially for people that this is their second marriage, they have a separate family, that they want to inherit their property that they acquired over a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to keep the assets separate. And a really good way to keep the assets separate is to put it into a container that is a waterproof, airtight container that maintains it separate from all of her assets. And a trust is that container. A trust, you have to proactively title a very specific way. So if I wanted a trust separate, it would be the Sean Garner Trust. And then my bank account would be titled the Sean Garner Trust. Now, I can't add anybody to that bank account unless I write them into the trust as a trustee. When the bank adds somebody to the bank account, they're going to say, let me see the trust agreement, or let me see at least the certificate of trust. And if my wife is not named on there, then she doesn't get to get named on the bank account. Now, I'm going to get in trouble when I get home for this hypothetical.
Well, wait a minute, though. How do you buy a house, then?
You buy a house.
If we're going to keep, okay, I'm keeping mine, my wife's keeping hers. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep everything separate, like you said. So how do we buy a house?
So what you do is you determine what amount of the purchase price is coming from you and what amount of the purchase price is coming from her. And if it's 60% from you, then you have a 60% interest in the house. That 60% interest is deeded into your trust, and her 40%
interest.
And you
can deed it that way.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And that is a true prenup. That is actually following through on the intent of the prenup.
Yeah.
Yes, where in a prenup you can
say anything
you want.
In other words, the same thing with the bank account.
Absolutely.
Same thing with the cars. Same thing with anything.
Yes.
And you can actually list out, okay, the house is 60% mine, 40% hers. The car is 60% hers, 40% mine. The bank account is 50-50.
Exactly.
Whatever.
And you could do that, in a single trust where you're both on the trust as trustees.
Yeah.
But I highly recommend if you're going to have separate assets, just have separate trusts. It makes it so much easier, right? Rather than having a jar that you're going to stick a divider in between and put her stuff on one side and his stuff on the other, have two jars and have his stuff in one jar, right. One trust, and have her stuff in another
and
jar.
That would be 60% of the house.
Well, exactly, the 60% interest in the house, and it says it right on the deed.
Nice.
And so that's how you keep assets separate. And so when he passes away, his heirs get his share. Now, a lot of times what we write into the trust is that she has a right to occupy the house, even though he has a 60% interest in the house or even 100% interest in the house. She has a right to occupy the house until she either passes away or leaves it for a period of 6 months. That's typically what we put in there, because if she were to go in a nursing home, then it would be hard to get an affirmative statement from her that she was abandoning her right to occupy, but that lapse of time then gives you a clear contractual understanding as to what now can be done with the house, and now it can be sold and distributed to the beneficiaries.
If we set this all up in Arizona, we're living in Arizona, we get this thing all set up in Arizona, we move to Idaho.
Yes.
As you say, Idaho is going, and one of us dies, okay, this whole trust, this whole contract that we just wrote up in Arizona is going to be honored in Idaho.
Absolutely. I'll take it one step further. It would be honored in France. Now, here's the catch. You can only put U.S. assets in a U.S. trust. You cannot put assets from a foreign country in a trust, and you need a U.S. trustee for it to be a U.S. trust. But you can move anywhere throughout the United States, and it'll be fine as long as you have a U.S. trustee. You could move anywhere in the world, and it would be fine. All of the U.S. assets would still be subject to the U.S. trust under the state laws in which the trust was drafted.
But what if we bought a house in France?
No.
Now what happens?
I don't know.
Now what in other words, now we're under French law.
Yes.
And now we're going to have to figure it out under French law.
Or Mexico or Canada.
Canada or whatever country you're moving to.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I think that's good to know. But this goes back to that full faith and credit portion of the Constitution.
Yes.
That all states are going to recognize these contracts.
Yes, yes. And so another power that was enumerated to Congress was the power to determine coinage.
Yeah.
And that was a very important power, right? Because under the Articles of Confederation, every state was printing up their own type of money, and it was very difficult to be recognized throughout the separate states.
And it specifically says to coin money.
Coin.
Regulate the value thereof and of foreign coin. And fix the standard of weights and measures. So they need, the Congress job is to fix these standards of weights and measures, because in order to coin money and regulate the value, you'd have to know what the standards are.
Right.
Okay.
So basically they would determine exactly how much weight a $1 gold coin would have.
Right.
And how much weight a $1 silver coin would have. And therefore we know that money is true value.
Yep.
And in fact, there was a prior version in the Constitution that allowed Congress to emit bills on the credit of the United States, and that was scrapped. because the founding fathers felt that if they did that, then what would happen is Congress would start printing money, and then that would devalue the money that was currently out there in circulation and lead to hyperinflation and essentially rob us.
It did. They had the experience of that.
Through the Articles of Confederation.
Because bills of credit, that's what they are. They're paper money. It's a piece of paper.
That's why it's called a dollar bill.
Exactly. It's just a piece of paper that says, I owe you so much money.
And the federal government will back that up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they specifically struck that provision from the Constitution because they did not like the ability of the United States. They did not want to grant that ability to Congress to print money. Well, guess what we're doing right now?
Well, and that's why Congress went over its authority to create the Federal Reserve Act.
But does
the Federal Reserve Bank, because that's an unconstitutional act.
Does it have authority to delegate a power that it was never enumerated with in the first place?
Yeah.
Right?
I can't delegate something to you if I don't already have the authority to be able to do it.
Precisely.
If I don't have the authority to kill somebody, which I don't, nobody does,
mm-hmm.
I can't delegate that authority to you.
Yes, and that is what we've seen in the Federal Reserve. And so when the president, in his benevolence, says, hey, American citizens, because you vote for me, I'm going to give you all of these stimulus checks, and I'm your wealthy uncle. Well, guess what? That's absolutely unconstitutional.
Absolutely.
And the population loves it, and they continue to vote those people into office, and that's why we're in this spiral of economic turmoil.
And we're not the trustees we should be.
No. Okay, we're coming up on a break. This is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law.
Have a question? Our phone lines are open. Call 344-5258. That's 344-KBLU.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
Hope lives here in California. But during these challenging times, we could all use a little extra support. Visit calhope.org for free COVID-19 emotional support resources or call our warm line at 1-833-317-4673.
H&R Block has many options to make filing your taxes easy. Our tax pros can help you get your max refund with or without the office visit. Drop in, drop off, or a tax pro can even do your taxes virtually. Send some pics from your phone without leaving home. Just another way, Block has your back.
All tax situations are different. Not everyone gets a refund.
So when you need a hand with your taxes, H&R Block is here for you. Drop off your taxes today at their offices in Yuma, the Foothills, or San Luis, and let their experienced tax professionals help get your taxes won.
Listen to Sean Hannity weekdays from noon to 3 right here on 560 AM KBLU. Sean Hannity's brought to you by Liberty Motorsports on Arizona Avenue for all the best motorsports products in the industry, plus your service needs since 1981.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
So, Howard, we were talking off air that we are trustees of these rights that our founding fathers fought for and outlined in the Constitution. But these rights are God-given rights. They put the concept down on paper in the form of a constitution and the Bill of Rights. And then they handed that down to the people and said, okay, you are the trustees. And in fact, there is a quote from Benjamin Franklin when he walked out of the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, And a woman asked him, you know, the public was very interested to see what they were developing. And she said, what have you done in that convention? And I'm not getting the phrasing right, but essentially what she said is, what have you guys done for our country? And he says, we've created a public, ma'am, if you can keep it. And it's a republic. It's not a democracy. Hmm. And that's the important thing. Now, it's a democratic republic, meaning we democratically elect our representatives, but then our representatives go and they stand in those seats of government and they protect us from the infringements of our rights by other people.
Yeah.
That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to make sure our rights are protected. They're not supposed to be the ones trampling over our rights themselves. Yeah. But that seems to be what is happening, as they're taking more power unto themselves and feeling that they have a better mind how to run business and a better mind how to run fiscal policy and a better mind how to manage contracts like we've been talking about.
Right. Yeah,
and they're taking away our rights. Yeah. They're not giving us rights. They're taking away our rights when they state that they have the authority to do such and such.
And, you know, everything... The quote that Franklin said, the end of that quote, if you can keep it.
Mm.
So in his mind was, look, you guys are going to have to work at this thing. Otherwise, you will lose it. You know, that's what he meant by that. We gave you a republic if you can keep it. You have to be able to keep it. A republic just doesn't exist by itself in a vacuum.
Yeah.
It exists because people... know what it is and support it. That's what the Constitution is. You have to understand the document in order to support it. And if you don't know what's in the document, if you don't know the document, and like I tell my classes, if all the players on the football field had no idea what the rules of football were, what would the referee do? He would be able to do anything he wanted to do because nobody would have the wherewithal of the knowledge to raise their hand and say, hey, ref, you can't award 20 points for a touchdown.
Right,
it's against the rules.
Or you know, for this basketball game with Gonzaga, you know, we got this incredible Final Four basketball game, and you know, in the last seconds, they throw up a three pointer, and it goes in, and game over, they win, and everybody recognizes it. It's legit, right?
Exactly.
But what Congress is doing when they're printing money, or rather, when they delegate the authority to the Federal Reserve to print money. Yeah. What they're doing is they're extending that time period. Yeah. And they're saying, oh, well, hold on a second. Let's give them another hour to play. And then it's like, well, who's the winners? Who's the losers? Oh, no. We're just going to continue extending out the deadline. And you keep moving the mark. You keep changing the rules on us. And it becomes very difficult to have any type of certainty in running a business. In fact, I was having a discussion with my wife the other day, and she says, how can people... plan for business and plan for taxation and how they're going to allocate the resources to put together an organization that is going to help employ people, that is going to help develop goods and services when the government keeps changing the laws every 4 years. Yeah. And the problem is, it was never intended to be that way. The Senate, okay, was meant to represent the states equally. And that was the great compromise because there was big states and there were small states. And so each state wanted equal representation. And then there also needed to be some type of proportional representation based on the population of those states. So we've got the Senate that's got two senators. Now, those senators originally in the Constitution were not elected by the people because the people will inevitably, when they find out that they can elect people that will provide them greater entitlements, they will constantly elect those people that will give them the most entitlements until the democracy or the general population destroys themselves by taking all the money away from the production and the people that produce the goods and services, and they just take those, and now the means of production are destroyed and the democracy will fail.
Absolutely. Democracies have always failed. They've never succeeded.
The average lifespan is what of a democracy?
200 years.
200.
Professor Teitler told us that in a little quote that he...
Yeah, I've got the quote right here. I'll read it.
Yeah, read it.
It says, a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. it can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse or more benefits, money. Right? Benefits. Money. Yep. From the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy, always followed by dictatorship. The average age of the world's greatest civilizations has been 200 years. These nations have progressed through this sequence from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to apathy, from apathy to dependence, from dependence back into bondage.
Yeah, and at least it's a circle, because once we get into bondage, then we're going to come out of bondage through spiritual faith, and we'll do the circle all over again. So we're kind of at the tail end, because we're in the middle of this cycle right now. We're at the tail end of it.
I think we're kind of in the 11th hour here.
We're about ready to go. If we're not in bondage yet, we might as well be. But we're basically there. But it'll eventually get... That's why I say human nature being what it is, and as long as humankind survive and we don't blow each other apart, the cycle will continue.
And it does. So getting back to the... Senators were never really intended to be voted upon by the popular vote.
They were elected by the state legislatures.
They were elected by the state legislatures.
On purpose, because, again, this is all about power. They didn't want a minority of people overruling a majority. So this is why states like Delaware got a little upset about Madison's proposal. Okay, everybody's going to have proportional representation based on population. And Dickinson said, wait a minute. You guys are always going to win the vote. Mm-hmm. Virginia has all the people in it.
Right.
Little Delaware doesn't have very many.
Right.
So wait, how does that fare? And so they were trying to provide justice.
Absolutely. And so with this, so we've got the House of Representatives that represent the people directly.
Correct.
And it was no coincidence that taxation bills needed to originate in the House.
Absolutely.
Because those were the people that were directly responsible to the people. Theirs was the shortest terms of 2 years.
Sure.
And the Senate was supposed to have a longer term to provide some consistency. And the 6-year term was partialed out to every 2 years.
Yeah.
There would be another 6-year term. And so it was three divisions.
Even a third of the Senate. You'll notice how they divvied up this power. They didn't want the power consolidated. This is all about power. They divvied up the election of the senators in terms of thirds, so that, yeah, every 2 years, even a third of the Senate. So we could really abolish our government, as provided for in the Declaration of Independence, every 2 years if we wanted to. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about 435 people in the House and mm-hmm. 33 senators. That's, what, 468 out of 535. What is that, about 80, 90% of the government?
Right.
So, I mean... Now, we have term limits. You know, people bellyache about we need to have term limits. I said, we already got them.
Yes.
But we have to pay attention.
As trustees, we need to take our duty seriously.
Yes, we do.
We need to understand what those legislatures are actually going to do with the authority that we delegate to them. And we got to make sure the senators out there are enforcing or basically restricting other citizens from taking away, infringing upon my rights.
Yep.
Not creating rights out there just out of thin air. Not creating a whole bunch of rights from the judicial branch or from the presidential podium. We want it. We want our rights protected. That's what we want.
That's what it says in the Declaration of Independence.
And then leave us alone and allow us to produce our own wealth. And if they would allow us to do that, then this country, although it already is wealthy beyond belief, would be even better off. But when you start taking from those who produce wealth and punishing them by creating a higher tax for producing services and goods, then you disincentivize them from producing those goods and services. And what do? They find ways to do it in other countries. And now we've basically banned them from producing.
Why our companies go overseas to make their products.
Yes. And
it's not a news item.
The corporate tax right now is supposed to jump up. I think it's 22% right now. It's going to jump up to, I think, 37% under the new Biden proposed tax law, which Biden shouldn't be proposing anything. It should be Congress that's proposing this, but nonetheless.
Well, they still have the authority to overrule him. They don't have to pass what he's asking.
They do. But unfortunately, there's a lot of backroom dealing going on. Yeah. That's all the time that we have today. As citizens, we are trustees. We are trustees of this freedom that we've been granted and inherited from our founding fathers, from God. And are you going to be a good trustee? That's the question. And that's all the time that we have for today. This is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
From the 1 Hour Air Conditioning and Heating Studio, this is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.